Welcome to the Consulting and Conversations podcast at UBS Private Wealth Management in West Palm Beach. My name is John Castronovo, a private wealth advisor and one of the senior members on our team. Today, I have with me two of my colleagues, Mary Galemo, a financial advisor on our team, and Kristen Liller. Kristen is an executive director and client solutions specialist in the Family Office Solutions team within Private Wealth Management here at UBS. The Family Office Solutions team holistically services ultra-high net worth clients and their families in partnership with private wealth advisors like our team. Mary joined UBS and our team in 2021 after having been part of a family office specialty group at another institution. I am lucky to have both of you here today, and thank you for joining in this discussion.
Hi, John. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, great to have you both here. But really, our topic today is the next generation is now. And we always talk about the next generation, both as we're speaking with clients and really in general, and having the opportunity to have Kristen and Mary here, they bring a perspective to our organization and to our team and our division as to what they're experiencing as they have worked with families in this space. And while we talk about the next generation, we always seem to talk about the next generation, but we really don't talk with the next generation too often. And really, we want to delve into this topic today on the conversation. So as we get started, Kristen, define the next generation as we talk about it, because it can mean different things to different people.
It's a really good question, especially because we do talk a lot about the next generation without necessarily defining it. And it's primarily because it's self-explanatory in a lot of ways. The next generation is quite literally the next generation. But when we talk about it, especially from a wealth management context or from my seat on the family office side, it's really who's in the position to really step up from an inheritance perspective and from a leadership perspective within their family offices or within their broader families, and really are going to be recipients of that wealth moving forward. And part of the reason why this is such an evergreen topic is that there's always a next generation. And when you're dealing with families, you're really dealing across multi-generations. So understanding what's important to the next generation is incredibly important. The other way you can look at it too is the next generation of wealth creators. So that could be millennials, it could be Gen Z. You could continue to think about it as it moves down the line sequentially, but we always want to be thinking about what's important to the next generation, what's different from a business perspective, what's different from a values perspective. This way we can really help empower that next generation, especially as they inherit those assets and put them into a place where they're is a ton of opportunity from that inheritance versus it can be a really intimidating thing to inherit a lot of money. So to be able to really help prepare them, I think is a huge first step.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a good note first in identifying who the next generation is, but also recognizing that each next generation that comes through will be different. Their needs will be different. Their values are different. And so making sure that you customize your approach as each next gen comes through.
Okay. Great. You both bring perspectives to our business. And in that, you've had opportunities to work with families in both of your careers, both here at the firm at UBS and with prior firms that you were with. So let's talk a little bit about maybe some of those experiences. And Mary, I'll start with you. What are your observations in real life cases with families that you've worked with and specifically with working with that next generation?
So throughout my career, I now have worked with a couple different generations, all that would be considered next gen. And something that I've learned is first to really work on keeping my assumptions at bay, just because an individual may fall into a certain generational category. It certainly does not mean they are all the same. Their values can differ, their wants can differ, their interests certainly. And so I've learned to sit back and almost act like every time I meet with someone in the next generation who's either inheriting wealth or has created wealth, that I first listen to them completely and act almost as if I know nothing about them and start from the very basic foundational roots with them. So that way I've learned to keep my assumptions at bay. Because I've certainly walked into a couple meetings or calls where, you know, I expect one thing and it's kind of the complete opposite. So I want to make sure that I'm customizing our approach and our advice to them to what they're really wanting. So whether that means they're very interested in philanthropy or they know way more about investments than you may expect, what I've learned is to keep assumptions at bay. And just because someone may fall into a certain generational category doesn't mean that they may follow what the majority of their peers think.
Okay. Thank you. Kristen, anything to add to that?
I think that's a really important point, especially when you talk about sustainability and some of the trends that are definitely building. It is hard to create one blanket statement about the next generation. And so to go in with a clean slate and to really get to know people, I think is incredibly important. On the family side, when you're dealing with multi-generations, I do think it's really helpful to level set and essentially figure out what matters most to each generation within that family construct, because it's not just about financial literacy in terms of preparing the next generation. It's also about values and what you're instilling in them and making sure that they're good stewards of that financial capital moving forward as well. So understanding really the values at the center of the family and making sure that the conversation is holistic apart from just the financial elements, I think really helps prepare the next generation for this next step and to take on more responsibility within the family, both from a financial perspective and that leadership perspective that I spoke a little bit about earlier.
Yeah, I agree. I also had one situation where, to get a little more specific, where we had the Gen 1, if you will, who had created the wealth. They were very, philanthropy was very important to them. They had a family foundation, and their goal was that the Gen 2 and Gen 3 coming after would take as much interest in that as they had. And of course, that's not always the way it goes, right? Because again, different people have different interests. But in that situation, where we had a couple Gen 2 and Gen 3 who took a leadership role and were immediately interested in philanthropy like their family was, the others who didn't think initially they would be interested in philanthropy at all, we just had separate conversations with them and said, you know, just because you might not be interested in philanthropy in the exact way that your grandparents or your parents were, doesn't mean there's not a space for you. And so we helped, again, step back and talk to them about what is it you're interested in within your community? What needs do you, would you hope to help that might need some more attention? And after having more of a customized and individual approach with them, they found pockets within philanthropy that they ended up loving. And so it's not about pushing someone into something they're not interested in, but it's about, again, just listening to what's important to them and seeing if there might be an avenue that works for them.
Okay. Great. Thank you. So, question for both of you. Obviously, we all bring a perspective to our positions and what we do and how we work with families. And I know in my working with families and having this discussion about the next generation, you know, a lot of times what my experience has been is that a lot of times the generation one, the current generation, is not necessarily apprehensive, but they're not sure how to engage the next generation. And sometimes the default ends up being, well, I don't need to tell them just yet. So with that in mind, and I'm sure you've both experienced similar things, what examples can you give where you helped the current generation overcome that hesitancy in engaging the next generation? And what have you seen that's worked in doing that?
So I'm working with a family right now, and it's very similar to that. It was not necessarily about sharing the amount of wealth that the next generation was going to inherit, but also to think through what their trust and estate planning structure was. And part of the reason why that's so important is what I've realized a lot with working with families is they also don't understand how their inheritance works or their trust structure works. So understanding what the trusts are set up for, when they have access, what kind of all of the estate planning elements that can be a little bit more, we'll say boring for lack of a better word, I think is really important to make sure that the next generation is set up to understand what their inheritance is and how it's structured and being able to really work through some of that. What I've been working a lot on the family office side is thinking through governance structures. And some of this is applicable to any family. So within a family office, a lot of the times you have investment committees or you have different committees where you can actually get the next generation involved. And it doesn't have to be, it could be almost like an apprenticeship or where somebody shadows the investment committee for a period of time. But it's a really great way, to Mary's example, to get the next generation involved in areas that they're interested in. So for example, for children who are interested in the philanthropy side, being able to have them really ingrained from an investment committee or from a committee perspective in philanthropy or on the investment side. So there's a few different ways to think about structuring those. But then the donor advised funds, to Mary's point, being able to have kids involved in those conversations around philanthropy, because you can tie in both the financial elements as well as the philanthropic elements and really be able to interconnect those two, I think is a really wonderful learning tool and a great way to connect the family as well. And then the last thing I'll say is we do have a lot of people who will look to set up smaller accounts for their children so that they can understand how to trade, what is a stock, what is a bond, and really just familiarize themselves with kind of the basic financial markets or cash markets that to help them learn. And sometimes that's buying ETFs, but it gets people familiar with at least the language that surrounds the industry, which can be a huge barrier to or hesitancy, especially when kids get involved in the next generation and start to take financial responsibility for themselves.
Yeah. And to build off what Kristen said, I'll echo a lot of what she said. I'll try not to repeat it, but I've had similar experiences where, again, when the Gen 1 is trying to figure out, you know, maybe they're hesitant to share the exact amount of wealth that would be passed down. It's first taking it slow because, you know, this is wealth that they've accumulated or inherited from generations prior, possibly. And, you know, it's a big deal. And those are big conversations to have. And so every family is different, like we've said. And so first, again, it's taking it slow and understanding that we have to talk to Gen 1 and get them comfortable and ready to have this conversation, not push them into it too quickly and explain the different routes we can go. Those routes can be very different for each individual kid, for the grandkids, and take our time with it and know, you know, you don't have to share the exact dollar amount, but it is important to, especially in the case of trust and estates, to educate Generation 2 and Generation 3 on what a trust is, what an estate is, what this wealth could mean for them. And you can go about that without having to give, you know, the exact dollar amount maybe that Generation 1 would be passing down. And then something fun that we have done before, and this was with really little kids, so more typically a Gen 2 or Gen 3 and grandchildren often, they were all under the age of 10 and, you know, they didn't know what the stock market was. And so at Christmas time, they were gifted a certificate, almost if you will, with about, you know, a listing of 6 stocks that were going to go into an account for them. And then they just got to track those stocks over the year and learn what it meant. A couple were dividend stocks, a couple were not. And then they just got to watch how they played out in the market. And it can be a fun way to foundationally get them started on what a stock is, what a bond is, what a portfolio means, what the market is that everybody talks about. So again, just an individual approach to each generation, I think, is important.
And Mary, I know you have young kids, but especially my boys are 3 and 5 now. So this is a topic that I'm thinking a lot about. And talking to my colleagues on the family advisory and philanthropy side, that foundation, even when they're really young, is never too early to start because kids this age absorb everything. And a lot of their foundational views on money are starting at 3 and 5 years old. So I'm really intentional with the language I use around my kids. And I think that is a really good application across all families we work with, is really understanding that it can start at 3 and it just compounds and grows on that. And you can add obviously more lessons as they get older, but it starts when they're little.
Yeah, I agree with you. You can never start too early.
I agree with the two of you in that somebody who has kids that are older, you know, even though it's not something we emphasized when our kids were younger, but we were always involved in giving back, is that even when you're not intentionally dropping those messages, these are messages that your children pick up on. And we can see that reflected in our children now who are currently adults and how what their interests are and how they want to give back. And they're not necessarily at a point in their careers where it's easy for them to give back, especially on a financial means. But they give back in multiple different ways. And it really is that foundation that you build that you know, in our case, we didn't realize we were building at the time.
Yeah, that's a good point. Right. There's always a message getting put into children.
What you both talked about experiences, and we've talked about that. And in all of our careers, myself included, we've had different roles within financial services prior to coming into the roles that we're in today. But as you enter into a new role, there's always that you're given that guidance, the education. This is, you know, Kristen, in your position going into the Family Office Solutions Group, I'm sure, okay, these are the things you got to look out for, that type of thing. But then there's the experiential. So talk about that moment that you might have had once you're in the Family Office Solutions Group. It was like you weren't necessarily prepped for it, but you definitely learned from it.
There are so many situations that part of being on the client side, I think in general, is that you get thrown curveballs all the time. And so no client situation is different. Everyone is going to handle kind of the family dynamics in a very different way. One of the learnings that I've had recently is I've been working with a lot of very established family offices. And I think the assumption a lot of times is that they have everything figured out. That from the outside looking in, these are some families that are very well known. And the thought is, well, they probably don't need help on governance. They probably have everything figured out. And what I've learned is that getting to the heart of a few different things. One, family dynamics are probably the most important when you start to think about multi-generational families and how that looks. So really understanding what makes everybody tick, getting everyone on the same page, and helping to facilitate those conversations is invaluable. But then the second component is really on the governance side, is thinking through how you can structure investment committees. People want to learn how to be better and how to create a better family structure so their family stays together. Because what you see in a lot of family offices is around Gen 2, Gen 3, especially Gen 3, you start to see people pull away from their family office. So how do you keep people together? How does your financial capital become a source of togetherness as opposed to really creating sort of conflict? And that's been one of the biggest learnings, is that no one has it all figured out, and there's always room for growth within every family. And that's my family, as small or as big as you can get from both a person and a financial capital perspective. And then on the personal side, I think my children continue to teach me to grow kind of even within the family office role. I think I went out on maternity leave. My kids are 5 and 3. So right around when I had started in Family Office Solutions, I had come back with my second. And what I've learned is that I really love to work, and I love what I'm able to model for my younger children through what I do. That I love what I do, that I show up, that I work really hard, that it's important to take pride and show effort in everything that you do. And I do think those key lessons are passed on to my kids, but it's really interesting to see my work life through my kids' eyes and having to explain to them why I go to work and why I miss certain things. And of course, there are moments where you're sad that you had to miss something because you're traveling or you're working late, but it's really also eye-opening to see how I'm able to express those values that are important to me and to my kids just through working.
I think that's such a good note, especially as any working parent, and realizing that, you know, the message, just the way you get up and act every day, typically, you know, it's your actions that are passed to your children, whether or not you're realizing it, even more so than what you're saying, right? And so I completely agree with you on that.
Oh, great. Very insightful. Thank you. You know, we're always talking about the difference from the first generation, Gen 1, as we refer to it, Gen 2, whatever. But how do these needs differ when you're working with the next generation from the prior generation? And then also, in those needs differing, is there a difference between risk tolerance and those types of things within the investment world that you see from both from the next generation versus the current generation?
I would say that I think the risk tolerance tends to differ. And I think that's natural. I think that typically the generation who has created the wealth can tend to be more conservative because, you know, they put the blood, sweat, tears, hours into creating that wealth. And then, you know, Gen 2 and Gen 3 are a little bit removed from that. They may have seen it through their parents, through working and been a part of it in some way, but they were not the direct wealth creators. And with that, again, this is not always the case, but with that, I think that Gen 2 and Gen 3 can tend to be less risk averse and they're willing to take a few more risks. They're willing to put some of that capital at risk for more growth and be a little bit less conservative. So that's what I've seen on my end. Kristen, I don't know what your experience has been.
Very similar. So we just published the Billionaire's Ambition Report, which was focused really this time. It was focused on that transition from the wealth creators to the successor generations. And one of the findings is that 43% of the wealth creators intended to increase their allocation to private debt and to fixed income, which, I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense in the next 12 months,
right,
especially given where rates are right now. But the successor generations, 59% were looking to raise direct private equity and 55% to invest more in private equity. And that's something that I've noticed, not only in terms of kind of the successor generations, but even as you continue to move down sequentially, is this interest in private companies and investing on the private equity side. So what I've found, and again, this is a little bit of a blanket statement, so I recognize it's different for everyone, but a lot of the next generation has been comfortable using ETFs or other vehicles to benchmark their equities or for the broader cash marketplace. And then you have this real interest in private markets. And I think it comes at a really interesting time where you've seen the democratization of that asset class as well. So it's kind of a nice entry point to be able to help grow that space. But there does seem to be an interest in kind of that tangible company component versus the equity market and the fixed income market, which I thought was interesting. And it definitely shows up in the report. And you're probably talking about, obviously, the successor generation. So there's still a generation below that too. But I think that theme from a risk perspective still continues.
Yeah. And I think taking into consideration with that successor generation, so again, Gen 1 has already created the wealth. And with Gen 2, that putting it in equities and really growing what they're inheriting could be their way of creating wealth on their own and furthering that wealth beside just instead of caretaking it, if you will. And then I also think with the successor generations, we're seeing a trend right now where there's a lot more interest in the company itself, as you said, on that private equity side. And what do they stand for? What good are they doing? I think is something that can be kind of at the forefront of the mind of successor generations.
Okay, good. Good perspective. Let's shift a little bit and let's talk about technology. You know, obviously, technology affects all our lives, whether we're talking on these conversations as we're talking about what we do in wealth management or in general in society. So what differences or what observations do you have in terms of how technology affects working with the next generation versus the current generation? Or what, how do you see the role of technology in doing that?
It's so interesting because when we think about even generationally, I'm considered an elder millennial and I've had a cell phone since I was 13. So if you think about digital natives as we move down, I think it's important to understand technology and the role that it plays in terms of communication, in terms of access to information, to looking at statements and performance. People want instantaneous information and they want to be able to look at it on their phone and have it very quickly. What I will say is that it doesn't replace in-person relationships. And I stress that because I think it's so important to have that connection with whomever you're talking to, whether it's the wealth creator or a next generation or any kid within a kind of a family structure. I think it's really important that you don't assume that, we can't text anymore, however, that a phone call or a Zoom will suffice. And so I think it's incredibly important to make sure that that in-person is still there, because while people want instantaneous access to information, people still want to know who's on the other side of the call. So a few years ago, when there was so much talk around robo-advisors and things of that nature, I think it works for some portion, but being able to sit down, being able to understand complex topics, which I think can get lost in translation a lot of times, or understanding family dynamics, all of those conversations need to be done in person. But I also think we're in the process of a huge technological change with AI. I think we're entering a new frontier. I think that is not only going to change people's business models, but also the way that we interact with technology. So I do think we're kind of at the precipice of something new as well.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think technology plays a big role in two different ways. First, echoing what you said, that as technology advances, we've become accustomed to being able to, you know, reach someone immediately and very quickly. And I think it can be a benefit, especially if, you know, you're traveling a lot and you really want to connect with your advisor, then Zoom or, you know, a phone call is a great way to be able to fulfill that need. But ideally, the relationship with your investment advisor and your financial advisor is a long-term one, and you can't replace that in-person connection. And I think it's really important that you get along with them and you're able to feel comfortable asking them questions. And that's something that, you know, can't be replaced, whether it's over a phone call or Zoom. So I agree with you. And I think the second piece to technology that we're seeing changes with these, you know, next generations is because they have such a quick access to information, they're consuming a lot. They're consuming a lot of information and quickly. And sometimes we've learned not all of that information is factual. So understanding that they could possibly be coming to you as their advisor with a lot of questions, and you know, some of them might be kind of out of left field and something you might not have seen, and taking into consideration the fact that they are consuming a lot of information, you might have to have them step back and understand that some of that information that they've read might not be factual and point them in the right direction and kind of keep them on track. So I think the speed they're consuming information is something that we need to take into account as advisors as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I would add to that too, being aware of where they're getting the information from, because I know, and this goes beyond this conversation, but I know there's certain business cable channels that I'll watch that I don't necessarily care for, but I'm watching them because I know our clients watch them. Mm-hmm. And if they have questions or they hear something that comes up on there, I need to be prepared for that and understand, well, where is this coming from? Where did they hear it? And again, to that point. So I think it is incumbent on us as advisors to be aware of where our clients are gathering information and pay attention to those sources, whether they're factual or not. We need to be able to discuss those.
Right. Absolutely.
Let's talk about, in terms of, you know, there's obviously, we have represented in the room here today, and our listeners don't necessarily know this, but a couple of different generations ourselves in terms of where I fit in within the business and when I got involved versus the two of you. So, you know, and always the discussion is that it's not only the next generation in terms of family wealth, but the next generation in terms of wealth advisors. And you know, so how do we deal with, and when I say we, you're the two of yours experiences in terms of being involved in that relationship where, well, you know, you're my parents' advisor, you're not my advisor. And what is your experience been there, and how do we work with that? Because obviously we work with families. We don't work with just one generation.
Yeah. So Kristen has already mentioned she's a millennial. I too am a millennial. And I think what's important there is to kind of beat it to the punch, if you will, if you can. So before they're saying, you know, you're my parents' advisor, it's trying to identify yourself as their advisor too. And so becoming involved with them as early as you can. So, you know, you've worked with their parents for however many years, but trying to get in front of the successor generation early. And even if that's a basic conversation around maybe budgeting, maybe they're still in school and you're exposing them to stocks like we spoke about earlier, they're 15 or they're 20 and they're heading off to college and you're talking to them about what their interests are and what their needs are at that moment, and kind of meeting them where they're at so that they have developed a relationship with you prior to just considering you their parents' advisor, and really fostering that relationship and understanding, again, as we've spoke, that their needs, their interests are going to look different than what their parents are, and that's okay. I think that's a really important way to approach successor generations.
I completely agree. And to your point, John, earlier about where people are consuming information from, they're consuming different information. They also have different interests. So understanding and being open to change and exploration too, I think is really important. What most people don't want to see is that you're being put into the same model as their parents, because they are different people and they have different goals and objectives, and they want to feel taken care of in a very similar way that their philosophy is being reflected in their portfolio as well. So I think being open to those discussions, to being able to have a debate around cryptocurrency or sustainability, and to really be able to flesh out all of these ideas and have a perspective, I think is really important as you, as the next generation of wealth advisors kind of step up, but also as advisors kind of incumbent are working with the next generation, is to really think about the entire playing field, to be able to have the conversations around AI and what's affecting people right now. I think what's interesting right now, if we think about the generation that will be, that are currently accumulating wealth, we're talking really millennials and Gen Z predominantly as kind of the rising generations. And I think one of the interesting components is the last 5 years, it's been accommodative interest rates, it's been COVID, it's been inflation. There's a lot going on. And even when I talk to my friends, a lot of people aren't familiar with how a mortgage works. What happened with rates that just went up? How do you buy a home? What does that mean? Are rates going to go back down? So all of these conversations are relevant to the next generation and future generations. So getting involved in those conversations as well, I think is really beneficial.
Yeah, and I agree. As an advisor, it's to remember and recognize that we're there to guide them. We're not there to tell them, this is the way to do it. This is our only approach. It's to guide them along what their path looks like. And that just very well could be different than what their parents looked like.
Good. And last question before we get into the closing statements or whatever, but how would you say, and you both came from other firms prior to coming from UBS, as did I, what are the differences that you've seen implemented that we've been able to do and the resources that we have that are unique, or at least the way we approach it, that are different than what families might be seeing from other firms?
One area is around sustainability being at the core of a lot of who we are as a company, being a Swiss company. But I think at the core of what we've been trying to accomplish is how we can really have some form of values alignment in terms of kind of the overall company structure, as well as how we think about both the implementation elements and aligning with values of future generations. Now, if you want just kind of a regular portfolio, that's absolutely easy to implement. But we're also really creatively thinking about how we access impact, how you can think about investing on a spectrum, on a continuum from philanthropy all the way through investing, and the importance of that it's one pool of capital and that you're pulling from. So where does each fall and how do they really intersect? And I think those are really interesting conversations that if are interested, we can absolutely explore and think about customized solutions and really dig into that, because there are, especially on the endowment and foundation side, we've had a lot of really interesting conversations. But also on the family office side, when we start to think about next generation, a lot of it has been, how do I differentiate between philanthropy and investments? If I want to make an impact, what's the best use of my dollar? And I think that's been a really differentiating conversation. And then I will say, just to quickly plug my team, is that I think the Family Office Solutions Group has done a really nice job in the ultra high net worth space in really being a solutions provider versus product. So we work really closely across not only family office governance and design, and that doesn't have to be what is a family office. It could be somebody who maybe needs to hire a bookkeeper or wants to think about their technology stack and how we can implement that. And then we have income tax specialists and art advisory. So there's a lot of things that we're thinking about creatively on the solution side that I think has started to differentiate UBS and our team more broadly.
Okay. Thank you. Mary, to you, I'd kind of qualify the question to you in that you came from another financial institution being in their family office mm-hmm. group. So what differences have you seen as far as UBS's approach?
Yeah. So, and I'll speak to our team specifically and being able to have, you know, the backing of UBS, if you will. So what I've seen is clients in our space that we work with at that ultra high net worth level are typically looking for a boutique firm, someone who's going to be able to be easily reachable and be customized to them. And our team is able to provide this very boutique white glove service to our clients, which is needed. And at the same time, as custom as we are able to be and as boutique as we feel for them, we have this backing of UBS where your resources, whether it's family office, the investments we're able to get into, almost seems limitless. Like there is not something a firm provides that we aren't able to provide or a version of it. And so it's being able to provide the boutique feel for our clients with the backing of a bank as large as UBS.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you both for your time today. Before we close, I just want to, we usually, and Mary, those who have listened to our other podcasts know that Mary usually is the interviewer. So she always ends with a kind of a fun fact, kind of interesting thing. But Kristen, I'll start with you. Something about you that we don't know that is like a fun fact kind of thing. And really, it doesn't have to do with what you do on a day-to-day basis working here. Maybe like a TV appearance you made or something. I don't know.
You know what I was actually thinking? There was probably 15, 20 years ago, I was in a nail salon and I was flipping through Glamour magazine and I was featured as a fashion do on their do's and don'ts page for what I was wearing. And I didn't even know it.
I love that. That is a great fact.
Wow. Okay.
I don't know where I pulled that one out of.
I don't know if I can compete with that.
Okay, Mary, now to you.
Okay. Something I think some people don't know about me because I've separated myself from it a little bit, but it definitely created, you know, a lot of the values or my work ethic. Most of my life, I was like very heavy into athletics, into volleyball specifically, and played college volleyball, considered going to the next level and playing overseas. But by the end of it and having stayed on, I stayed on as a graduate assistant to get my master's my final year and was pretty burnt out by the end of it when you spend your whole life since second, third grade playing a sport. But it taught me a lot of values of teamwork, of work ethic. And then I had this really cool opportunity to go out to Colorado Springs in my junior year and try out for the national team, which was a really unique experience. I did not make it. I made it as an alternate, which was pretty cool. But I had altitude sickness going out there for the first time. I haven't really been out west since, but I would love to. But that is something fun. I rarely share. My husband likes to share it more with people than I do, but that's something someone may not.
That's awesome.
That is really cool. Well, thank you both. This has been a great conversation. And thank you all for listening. And thank you, Mary and Kristen, for joining me today. You can find our podcast on Apple and Spotify or through our website, advisors.ubs.com/Palm Beach Private Wealth. We look forward to connecting with you all again soon. Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.